Hi, folks. It's Scott from buyandselldvc.com. Have you ever thought of giving your family a lifetime of Disney vacations? What if we told you you can lock in today's rate for the next 50 years? Again, that's buyandselldvc.com.
Hello, welcome to the WDW Review, and I'm your host today, Chris Malik. And I'm joined by a good friend of mine, a former resident of the state of Illinois, but now basking in the warm sunshine of the state of Florida. His name is Terry Whelan Jr. Terry, how are you?
I'm doing great, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing good. You're doing better than me, but I'm doing good. So
yeah, we're going to break some records today. Almost 90 degrees in February. So
I was just down, Terry, and it's such a nice break to get away from the Chicago weather. But everyone's going to look forward to beautiful weather in the future because we're all on the precipice of springtime. So, but 90 degrees, you say, huh?
Yeah.
I'm completely jealous. So, hey, Terry, so I got you on for a few reasons today. Really, I want to talk with you because you've got a book that's out right now. But, you know, I realize that we've not communicated a whole heck of a lot other than through today. It seems like everyone communicates through text or through Facebook. And, you know, I want to know a little bit more about you. So can I put you through some rapid fire questions? Is that cool?
Yep, absolutely.
All right. So we know you're a Disney fan, obviously. I mean, heck, you've relocated down to Orlando, Florida. Is it Orlando proper, Terry, or where do you live in Florida?
Yeah, I live just outside of Orlando.
Just outside of Orlando. Okay. So we know you're a Disney fan, and we're going to talk more about that in a little bit. But here's some quick questions. Give me your favorite park.
Epcot. Always has been, probably always will be.
Okay, why is that?
You know, it was my introduction into Disney when the first time I went in, you know, the late 80s. Mm-hmm. The very first day, the very first park that we went to was Epcot. And that was, you know, for me, from a park standpoint, that was my indoctrination into it all. And, you know, going on Spaceship Earth as my first attraction ever, I've just never forgotten that 30 plus years later. And there's always going to be something nostalgic about Epcot. I like, you know, just the whole idea behind it. I like the Imagineering behind it, the concept that was created. And I don't know that anything will ever trump that.
Now, can I ask you a question? And I'm a huge Epcot fan myself. Everyone who listens to the show is an Epcot fan. But I'm sure. What was it? Was it the educational aspect? Was it because we used to live in Illinois, or you used to live in Illinois, so you had Great America, you had Santa's Village, but nothing is like that. But what really grabbed on to you? I mean, what was your tangible takeaway? The color scheme, the Spaceship Earth globe? I mean, what was it? The dome? What was it?
Yeah, I just remember walking through there, even as a little kid, trying to figure out how they did it all, because it was different than, you know, like you mentioned, Great America, where we're from. And, you know, that's just a traditional kind of theme park, right? You know, it wasn't just roller coasters and some, you know, tilt-a-whirls and that kind of stuff. This was a completely different thing, and it was totally imagined. And I think just the fact that it was off the charts different for me as a 12-year-old, and the story behind it, you know, as I kind of got through hour after hour, I started to kind of realize that all of this had its own individual story. And so it wasn't just a jump on a ride, have fun for 45 seconds and get off. There was some education to it. There was story to it. It was a different, you know, especially the dark rides in the 80s. It was just a completely different thing. And it was overwhelming to me. It was so much more for me to take in than just jumping on a ride somewhere. And I think, you know, the education piece of it probably launched me into, you know, going back and saying, okay, how did they do this? Mm-hmm. You know, how did we get to this point? And that's really where my passion, and, you know, I always ask everybody in the book, you know, what does the magic mean to you? That's what the magic is for me is, you know, how did we get here? How did these guys come up with all of this?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm a big YouTuber. So as dorky as I am, you know, when I'm cooking dinner, I'll still go back and put on Walt's original Epcot speech where he goes in and discusses Epcot for the first time, and you know, the narrator comes on and kind of further explains about the spoken tire and how the living community is going to be out further from the center. And I love it. When we default to music, or at least when I do on YouTube, I default to original Epcot music and Epcot music, because it's got this, whoa, how do they even think about that? That I agree with you 100% in that, Terry. So
yeah, I mean, I would stress, anybody that hasn't seen that, what is it, 22-27 minute video, mm-hmm. It's so cool. I mean, even though, you know, what he created really at the end of the day was probably unsustainable, it was still, you know, just the ideas that he had and you know, the Imagineers and everybody that created Epcot still was able to take some of that. And it's just a really cool video.
Awesome. I agreed completely. Give me your favorite land, Terry.
My favorite land?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, good question.
And it doesn't have to be an Epcot, but...
Yeah, no, I think... That's a really great question. I think, you know, I'm going to say Adventureland, really, because I find myself, especially now being a local, I find myself having the ability to walk into Adventureland and really just kind of taking that in for hours. You know, I could go for 3 or 4 hours being down here and never leave Adventureland and just kind of, you know, take in the music loop and take in mm-hmm. the attractions and just kind of watch the people who are on vacation who, you know, maybe have never experienced this before. That's one of my favorite things to do right now. So I think it's definitely Adventureland. You know, like you just said with the music, mm-hmm. I find myself probably once a week turning that loop on and having it on in the background.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. It's often defined as my favorite land too. It's the one that feels the most like comprehensive. I don't know if it's the foliage. I don't know if it's the theming or just the great attractions, because there's like two classic attractions, one great treehouse, you know. But it is, I think, the best land in the Magic Kingdom. So.
Yeah, you know, the way I look at it is I haven't, unfortunately, at this point, spent a lot of time at Disneyland, but I've read, you know, tons about Walt, tons about the creation of Disneyland, had a lot of conversations with people. And for me, I think the way I look at it is, without knowing how all of that came together, I think Adventureland is really the most pure original Disney that we have access to right now.
Good point. That's an excellent point. You're right. Even though, you know, I guess you'd say Walt's hands were in the Pirates at the very, very end, the last thing he thought about.
Right.
But, yeah, and if you've not been over to Disneyland, or not many times, boy, the Pirates there, it's almost like it's a homecoming if you're a Pirates fan. So
right.
You got to get out there. All right, your favorite attraction, Terry?
I'm going to say Spaceship Earth. I know that it needs a little bit of love and needs some updating. But again, it's, you know, it just holds so much historic and nostalgic value for me that, you know, again, you know, going back to some of that education, but it's just so unique. And then right now I have to say a close second is probably Flight of Passage.
Okay. Well, I'm going to encourage you, if you haven't listened to one of our shows, our 150th episode show, and I'm going to give my show a plug to you. So go back and find our 150th episode. So we talk about Spaceship Earth and we kind of focus on it. And at the end of it, my co-host Stacy, our other co-host wasn't able to be there, and our good friend Tim Van Swole, we actually do a complete script reading where we splice in the sound, and it starts off trying to be very authentic, and it's very authentic throughout the, but you have to listen to it. It's something you won't hear on any other podcast that's ever been done before. So check that out, 150th episode, okay, buddy?
I will, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, and that's because it has so much value to me. I actually, if you remember, if you were ever on it in the 80s, the Walter Cronkite did the mm-hmm. narration, and the very first thing out of his mouth is he says four eons, and then he goes on with the script. And I took that, and that's, you know, that's, I started my company with that name. So my publishing company, my media company, is actually called Four Eons Entertainment. So that's how much it impacted me.
You know what, I appreciate that. I wrote that down because I was looking for, okay, who published your book, and I found Four Eons Entertainment LLC, and I scratched my head saying, now that's a new one, because I've got a bunch of Disney books and I haven't seen Four Eons Entertainment, so I'm glad you covered that. Outstanding. Yep, right. Your favorite restaurant at Walt Disney World. So where do you go to when you're looking for a really good meal? And it doesn't have to be Victoria and Albert's, or it doesn't even right. have to, where are you going?
I have to say, I think it's probably California Grill. there's just so many different things. I'm a huge sushi fan, so you know, being able to go up, have sushi, watch the fireworks, you know, have it all piped in, it's just an experience that is you know, like none other. And then, you know, probably Le Cellier right behind that, because who doesn't love steak when you're from Chicago? So
okay. Really good options. Your favorite movie. Now, I didn't say favorite Disney movie. Give me your favorite movie.
My favorite movie of all time is probably A Christmas Story.
Okay, so you're going with that, and you're going on TBS about 30 times each Christmas season to watch it, correct?
The TV doesn't get turned off from 7 o'clock at night till 7 o'clock the next night. Okay. It's on, at least in one TV in the house, it's on the whole time.
Did you make the pilgrimage when you were in Chicago to go to Indiana to see the house?
I did not, and it's such a bucket list item for me that I have to get there.
You're going to have to come back. Okay, well then, let's go with your favorite Disney movie too now.
Disney movie. Are we including Marvel, Star Wars, all
absolutely
of that?
And anything here under the umbrella?
Yeah, I mean, for me, probably right behind Toy Story is the original Star Wars, you know, for favorite movie.
Okay.
Favorite pure Disney movie, I think, is probably Aladdin.
Okay. Those are all great choices. Give me your favorite hero.
Ooh, great question. Superman. Superman will always be my number one hero, even though he plays for a different team.
He plays for a different team, okay.
He will be my hero.
Why is that? Was it comic books, Terry? What was it?
I wasn't really into comic books. I think, you know, everybody just sort of attaches themselves to somebody from that genre, and Superman was always my guy.
Okay. I have very clear memories as a kid laying down in the dining room because the TV was in the front room, and watching like the Christopher Reeve version on like a Sunday night, that was like the family movie night, you know. So I have clear visions of seeing Christopher Reeve in the pool with the chain of kryptonite as Lex Luthor mocked him as he was sinking, you know, and maybe in part two, you know. So I have clear memories of that. So
yeah, absolutely.
Give me your favorite villain.
Ooh. That one's going to stump me.
Okay. I'll give you some time. Think about that.
Yeah, give me some time. That one stumps me.
Okay. And then, you know, I want to know, you know, as a person, and we're going to ask you about your travels, about going from where you lived in Elgin all the way down. And you lived in Elgin, right, Terry?
Correct. Yep.
From being in Elgin down to Florida. But where will you travel next that's significant? Because right now, you're like, you are living, you know, many people's dreams just being that close to the Walt Disney World property. But give me a place that you're going to travel to from Orlando, Florida.
You know, my next kind of in-depth deep dive is I'm going to spend some time probably in the fall in Disneyland.
Okay.
I have some really good friends that live out there that are going to, you know, I'm going to go out and we're going to spend some time and they're going to kind of show me the ropes. But I want to spend, you know, a good probably 4 or 5 days just soaking up everything at Disneyland and really kind of put, you know, some of the things that I've read about for years and years and years, you know, and put eyes on it, because I've been to inside Disneyland one time. It was 15 years ago. It was the middle of the summer on a Saturday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And so for anybody that's ever been there knows that that is basically a walking nightmare. And I think we were there for 3 or 4 hours. We went on 2 attractions and it was just miserable. So we left. So I don't really know anything about Disneyland. So that's going to be my next kind of, you know, big Disney inspired trip.
Okay, and don't let anybody talk you out of it. Whatever your timeline is, don't let people tell you, oh, 2 or 3 days, you'll be done. Because I've been there once, and it was recently. It was in the last year and a half, 2 years, at Christmas time. We spent 2 days in Disneyland, 2 days in California Adventure. We may have spent actually 3 days in Disneyland, and I could have used more. So yeah. Don't let anybody tell you that it's only 2 days worth or a day worth. You could absorb as much as you want to absorb, and you're part of the Disney community like I am. Before you know it, you'll have people that will want to meet up with you and whatnot, but make sure you take enough time for yourself to just walk around and absorb everything you can get your hands on. I love that plan.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
All right, so let me ask you a couple questions. We're going to kind of segue into your book, but I'm curious, before we get to there, you lived in Elgin. Were you a lifelong Illinois resident at that point, Terry?
Yeah, I was actually born in Elgin, grew up mostly in South Elgin, and then after college, kind of transitioned back. I mean, they're basically the same town, as you know. But I lived in Elgin until I moved down here. Yeah.
Okay.
Outside of a couple, I had about a 2-year stint in Tennessee. I lived there. So.
Okay. So if you're listening and you're not from Illinois, Elgin is, I would say, about 35, maybe 40 miles northwest of Chicago.
Yep.
And exactly. As you're driving, it's a large city. It's not nearly as large as Chicago, but there was a time where it was Chicago. It was Rosemont, and people would recognize Rosemont from like the Rosemont. I forgot what it used to be called, Rosemont Horizon.
And Rosemont Horizon.
The Rosemont Horizon. And then it was Woodfield Mall, which is a gigantic mall. And then it was Elgin. And there was nothing else in between there. Hoffman Estates and all these little cities were nothing. So Elgin was a significant city on the way to Belvedere or Rockford, which is another significant city. So it was a major stop. But let me ask you this. Why did your life go from being an Elgin resident to being a Florida resident? What was the that's it, I'm going to do it, we're done? What was the momentary?
I think, you know, we traveled and vacationed here as a family. This was kind of our go-to trip every year. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, starting in, you know, 1987, I was coming to Tampa and Orlando at least once a year for years and years and years. I actually also lived in Tampa for a quick stint right out of college. And, you know, moved back to Illinois, finished at Northern Illinois University, and just always kind of had that idea that I want to have a different lifestyle. And I knew that early on that, you know, I was tired of the snow and the cold, and, you know, it's just not for me. I'm not a skier. I'm not a snowmobiler. I'd much rather, you know, be on the beach or in a boat or jet ski or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so I had the idea that I was going to come back here and live here at some point, partly for Disney, but partly just for the lifestyle. And so, you know, as life kind of took its turns, you know, I had the opportunity about 2 years ago when I came up with the book. I said, you know, I'm going to put all this together. And, you know, in the middle of all of this, you know, as part of the book launch, I'm going to make that move and make that lifestyle change.
Awesome. You know, there are many people listening to this that have debated that and have tried to make small steps, whether it's buying DVC and go down once, twice, three times during the year, or whether it's trying to buy a vacation rental down there and kind of use that as their foray into, you know, permanent living. But there are some that just simply can't for family reasons or for reasons of economic purposes at their jobs. But, you know, a lot of people would love to make that move. So, you know, that's almost a future show with me is finding out your real motivations and like the timelines of when you set things up. So that's wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Terry, tell me, so when I'm looking up you on Facebook and I see it says leadership, personal development coach, speaker, amongst other things. So describe that to me. What is personal development coach? What does that mean?
So my background is mostly in real estate. And as I was kind of progressing through that career, I realized that I had a passion for really at the end of the day, helping people build their business. And so I got into some training in the company that I was with. I eventually kind of started to build in the real estate business, it's all about lead generation, right? And so I started to build a little team and kind of put together a lead generation group, and really just enjoyed that. Just enjoyed seeing people, you know, kind of putting their idea together and having a vision, but not really sure how to go about all of that. And just kind of fell in love with the coaching piece. And so I went back in and got some accreditations and you know, joined John Maxwell team. I did a lot of research of different companies and just really kind of connected with John and John's content and who he is as a person. And so I joined John Maxwell team about 3 years ago and just, you know, kind of took that off in that direction and got into really full-time coaching and working with not just real estate agents, but working with individual entrepreneurs who are, you know, building maybe an online business, or they're starting a podcast, or they're writing a book, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of stuff. Oh, and still working with some of the independent contractor type real estate agents, mortgage brokers, network marketing people, and just really kind of found a passion for that and love hearing that, you know, just, you know, I always take it back to Walt, you know, taking that idea, taking that vision and putting it into practical action. I love that piece of it. And that's where it's just sort of led.
So I hate to even put words into your mouth, but if I could use two words, would something like the words professional mentor, would that be an accurate assessment of what you do, or what personal development coach would be a professional mentor?
Not always, because mentorship is really, here's how I did it in your space.
Gotcha.
Right. And so with a coach, what I do is I ask questions more than anything else. You know, I just kind of get them thinking about, I don't need to know your business as a coach to be able to coach you, because ultimately the way that I explain it to all of my clients is coaching is really like a bowling alley, right? A lane. You have the ball. You know what your goal is, that being the pins. You're in total control. My job is kind of to be the rubber kitty bumpers on the sides to make sure you don't fall off the rails, and just to ask kind of thought-provoking and have good question or good thought-provoking questions and have good conversations and just help you put your ideas into action. I don't need to know exactly what they did, where a mentor is kind of explaining, here's how I did it. Mm. Here, you know, let's walk through that. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Great analogy. Good. Absolutely. So let me lead you down the bowling alley then for a spot here. So what was your motivational point? You know, what was the point where you decided, I'm going to write a book about Disney? So here, let's get into the point where the book's called What the Magic Means, and it's essentially 10 stories of people, correct? Am I saying this wrong here? I want to make sure I'm portraying it correctly. Correct. Who, you know, put Disney in the center of their life for a number of reasons, and it allows you to kind of read their story, but then it allows you, it's interactive as well too. But what was the motivational point for you to say, you know what, I'm going to write this book? What was the linchpin?
You know, really two things, I think, for me. Number one, just kind of being a bucket list item. You know, a lot of people, again, you know, in what I do, a lot of people have ideas, and it's a lot of, I'd like to do this if and when certain things fall into place, right? That's how we kind of look at it. So for me, it was just like, I'd love to write a book and put it together with some of the passions of that I have of Disney, and, you know, the idea of story again, and hearing these, because I love reading the biographies and the autobiographies of some of these people that are, you know, are former cast members or Disney legends, or, you know, had something to do with it at some point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then really the other piece is, I just wanted to kind of put my contribution out there as a way of saying, you know, thank you to people like Walt and Roy and all of the people that worked to put all of these ideas and grow all of this together to give us what we enjoy. So, you know, it really was never a, I'm going to be an author, or I'm going to take this and it become a bestseller or anything. It was more of a fun passion project for me. Mm-hmm. That I was able to kind of mix Disney and personal development in together. And my hope is that it's a little bit different than things that are out there, because there's obviously no shortage of Disney books. And so it's just something that I really wanted to do as a passion more than anything.
Well, you know, so in full disclosure, so we talked a while ago, and when you were completing the book or very near completing, you contacted me and said, hey, Chris, would you mind taking a look? And, yep. And for a number of reasons, so you sent me an advanced copy through email, and I downloaded the PDF. And what I found particularly interesting was, so sometimes you catch on to an author's writing style, and sometimes you don't. And this is going to sound bad. I never could grab onto Shakespeare. Like, when I was reading Shakespeare in high school and college, I was like, these words elude me. I can't grab onto the concept of Shakespeare. I never could enjoy it. But, you know, with your writing style, you know, and actually having it focus on 10 different stories, I found like each chapter was like, okay, I want to read more about Corcus. I love talking to Jim Corcus. He's been on our show several times.
Yeah.
I could literally let Jim speak for 12 hours and we could get 12 hours of content, and like, I wouldn't fall. Absolutely. You know, I would love to hear him talk. Yeah. And then I met Jeff Barnes at the Indie Disney meet, but I've talked to Jeff a bunch of times and I love hearing Jeff's story. You know, it's incredibly fascinating how his life was in one direction, and then through this brain tumor, it completely shot in a different direction. And then you talk to guys like Panda, and it's like, whoa. So now we're talking like regular guys, you know? So yeah. I love the fact that it focuses on 10 different people. But before I get into that, what was the process like? Like, how did you actually put pen to paper? What was the starting? Like, where'd you come up with the idea? And like, how'd you initiate the idea? And how'd you start gathering information for this?
Yeah, I wish that was an easy answer, but it's, as you know, probably putting the podcast together, there's definitely not an easy path. So, you know, I thought about it probably for at least a year, if not 2 years, that I wanted to do something. And I kept bouncing back and forth of, you know, do I want to do a podcast? Do I want to do a book? Do I want to do a video something? And so I just really thought through it more than anything else. So, you know, John Maxwell talks about reflective thinking and taking time to think. And I really did that through this process. I just sort of said, you know, what do I want this to look like? What do I think will kind of ring true within the community? You know, because as you said before, when we were talking, you know, you consider yourself kind of an amateur in the podcast, even though you have really good success. I feel the same way. You know, I'm not a trained author. I didn't know how to do this book thing. And so I just kind of battled, you know, do I know what I'm doing? Does anybody really care what I have to say? Will anybody buy the book? You know, all of those limiting beliefs I went through in my head. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of kicked it back and forth forever. And I kept going back and forth between book, podcast, and I started to kind of say, okay, going into 2017, I knew that it was going to be something that if I didn't start working on it, I would probably be kicking it around for another 5 years or more. And so I said, okay, this is what I'm going to do. And I started to really just kind of put it all together. I mean, I put the plan together to say, I'm going to do, you know, I want to put this out there. I want to move to Florida. I just want that different lifestyle. And one of the very first conversations that I had with you just mentioned him, is Jeff Barnes, who's become an incredible friend of mine through all of this. And so he and I just had some really good conversations because he had put his first book out, The Wisdom of Walt, and was working on his second book at the time. And, you know, just kind of gave me some really good insights. And what did I do? A month later, I went and took it into a totally different direction and said, I'm going to do a podcast. And so I started to kick that around for 2 months and it just didn't feel right. And so finally I said, okay, this is going to be a book. And I just really kind of sat down and said, okay, if this is going to be a book, what is it going to look like? Who do I want? And I just sort of sat and made a master list of the people that I would want to hear their stories, you know, even though I probably read some of their books. And what you just talked about, I did purposely. I wanted to bring people who had all kinds of different backgrounds and different interactions within Disney. You know, I went all the way from Lee Cockrell, who was executive vice president of Walt Disney World, basically ran the whole place, mm-hmm. to somebody like Panda, or, you know, I even put in somebody at the very end, Kara Mall, who's a really great friend of mine. Kara and I actually worked for the same real estate company, and we have a connection where her and I met through a pilot program that Disney Vacation Club had put out about 10 years ago that just didn't work very well. And so, you know, I met a great friend who I talk to all the time who has nothing to do with Disney.
Yeah, zero Disney experience. Yeah, so, okay.
Except it's her passion. And so I went through that and as it, you know, as I thought through it, it all kind of just fell into place and said, okay, you know, here's the kind of the concept that I want for each person. Here's the flow that I want. I want to put their story in, but I also want to grab more than anything how it's impacted them, because the whole idea of the book was Disney has an effect on people in all kinds of different ways. And that's really just what I wanted to capture. And you know, as I worked on it and I took action, it just kind of all started to fall into place. And, you know, there's things, ups and downs and things that happen with publishers. And I just eventually said, okay, I'm going to do this on my own. And I created, you know, my own company and I self-published it. So,
okay. So I want to give you an opportunity here. I know we briefly talked about it, and we don't obviously want to tell everybody every chapter because they're going to want to buy the book, and sure. and I have it, and you can buy it. It's even on Amazon. So if you check out What the Magic Means on Amazon or Terry Whelan Jr., you'll find the book. So buy it on Amazon. But so we talked to 10 different people, and we essentially talked to them about what the magic means or how it became the centerpiece of their life. But like, describe like the interactive feature at the end of it too as well.
Yeah, so I went through and I wanted to capture really three main pieces. I wanted to capture, you know, just a little bit about their story. And then I wanted to capture how Disney has affected them. You know, what does the magic mean to them? Mm-hmm. And then at the bottom of each chapter, I took, you know, some kind of talking points and some strategies that they talked about within the chapter. And at the bottom of each one, I give the reader the opportunity to kind of start putting their story together. You know, what's their Disney memories? Who has impacted them? Who's been mentors for them? So each chapter just sort of builds on itself. And then all the way through at the end of the book, the very last chapter, I give the reader the opportunity to kind of tell their story, you know, tell their Disney story, tell, you know, their, what is it, how has it impacted them? And they have the opportunity at the very end to share it with me.
Yeah. And knowing you, I mean, you encourage them to like send you their information so you could read their information. So, and knowing you, you're going to read it and you're going to review.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So, Okay, outstanding. So let's go and ask you, you know, who was your mentor during this process other than Jeff Barnes? Who did you really, I mean, did you talk to Jeff on a daily basis, weekly? Who did you really lean on to get this done? Was it mom? Was it dad? Who was it?
You know, Jeff in the very beginning, and I think Jeff throughout some of the process, because I had a publisher from the very beginning. I had gone to them and said, here's my idea. Here's what I want to do. And they came back, said, great, we love it. We'll publish it. Let's run with it.
Okay.
And so I went through the process and completed the manuscript and actually sent it to them. And then some things transpired. And so I went and really kind of unfortunately sort of was frozen for about a 60-day period because I didn't, unfortunately, you know, even being in the business that I'm in, I didn't have a plan B. Mm-hmm. And so Jeff was great about, you know, kind of walking me through, here are some of the things. And I just had some conversations with people who really had gone down the path. And I eventually, again, you know, started the whole self-publishing. I didn't really... And it's not a pat on my back at all. I didn't really have anybody specific that I leaned on because I had a really clear vision about what I wanted to put out there.
Okay.
And so there were always things, you know, I mean, obviously I hired an editor and I hired a book layout and a cover design. And so I leaned on them specifically, you know, in those areas. But I didn't really have a true overall mentor in the book writing process outside of Jeff. I mean, I don't want to exclude him by any means because, you know, he and I would have conversations, but it's not like something I said, okay, you know, we're going to have a hour long phone conversation every 2 weeks and this is what we're going to talk about. You know, again, I just sort of, I ran down it blindly and bounced off the walls a couple times here and there and asked questions when I thought I needed to ask questions. And luckily it just sort of came through.
You know, I really appreciate hearing that because for everybody listening right now, and I've got friends that I know would like to write a book. And, you know, there's a million questions we have. Heck, you know, I've got a million ideas. But like, how do you get started? And knowing that, like, okay, you don't need professional training, you know, just start. Put pen to paper, gather your ideas, you know, and meet, find the next person, ask them questions. And you don't need professional training in this matter. Sometimes running down blindly down an alley, that gets you the results you need, you know? And, yeah. And like you said, if this was a bucket list item, if your goal is to not be the next published author of a 26-part series, then just get it done, you know, put pen to paper and start the process. And you might enjoy the process. I'm sure you had to enjoy this process the entire time. And like when you're going through it and completing each chapter, you're probably thinking, I can't believe I'm doing this. You know, this is crazy.
That's exactly what I would sit and think, is this really coming together? You know, like I get halfway through the book and I'm like, this is actually going to happen, you know? So, but I totally agree with you. I mean, it's just, you know, just jump. And, you know, like one of my mentors in John Maxwell, he always says, you know, jump and build your wings on the way down. And I think that's just, you know, it's so right on for this. You know, have somebody that you can lean on, you know, have somebody that has gone through the process that you can ask some pertinent questions to, you know, and there are some people who might need a more formal, you know, situation and having a coach or having a mentor in that. But what I always tell everybody is don't let that stop you from at least starting. You know, take the first step. That's all you need to do is take the first step and things will start to happen and you know, you'll increase your awareness about what you want to do and it will fall into place. And you know, one of the questions I get asked all the time is, you know, did fear stop you? Fear stops us from everything, right? But one of the things that I found out was by having conversations throughout the process with the people that I interviewed, with people like you who, you know, you got a really raw manuscript and you know, you were gracious enough to read through it. everybody in this community is going to welcome you and your product and your idea with open arms. And so that's the thing that I really stress with everybody is just take that step, because people are going to accept you.
And this community is unique in that sense, is we want to see everybody like have success. We want to see everybody thrive. There's no reason, and if you found that person in this community, then obviously you're going to unfriend pretty quickly. But we want to see everybody succeed. So you actually harp on something, and harp's the wrong word, I shouldn't use that word. You harp on something though that is important and is part of my daily life, because you know, in my job, I control a bunch of people, and frankly, I don't know if you know this, Terry, but I'm a golf professional. I run a course in DuPage County. I used to run two courses, but now there's a bunch of things going on. So on a daily basis, I have a written list of goals and whatnot that I need to accomplish on a daily basis. And from what I've gathered from your Facebook profile and knowing you, you're a big supporter of this as well, of having a documented list on a daily basis, but also long-term goals. Would this be something you'd want to talk about here?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm obviously a big driver of that. One of the things that I talk about is I want people to go through, you know, and have goals and go through a goal setting process and have those long-term, short-term goals. However, I don't want you to get caught up in the overall plan of it, right? You know, you can have a goal. You don't necessarily have to know even step one of how you're going to achieve that, but you can still have that goal. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you break it down, like you said, and then it becomes a day-by-day thing. So people get caught up too much in the how am I going to do all of this, as opposed to just saying, okay, here are the three things that I have to accomplish today, or that I can't accomplish today, that will help me build. And you know, and then you move on to the next day, and it's just a process. You know, one of the projects that I'm actually working on that may end up being, you know, the second book is that, you know, everything that we want to achieve is a process that we have to go through. And a lot of times we don't really like the process. You know, we want the promise at the end,
but
we don't really like the process. And so that breaking that down into, you know, small chunks, it doesn't have to be a big, long, exhaustive list every day. But if you can identify 2, 3, 5 things on a daily basis that will keep you moving forward and will snowball into the next day, that's really what it's all about. If it's one thing, that's fine.
You know, that makes complete sense. Thinking of one of my co-hosts is a marathon runner, or she's a half marathon runner. Her name is Stacey Nyman. And Stacy started off trying to run like a 5K, or, you know, it started off with like a 2-block run and a 5K. And, you know, like everybody, you know, we fight our own health issues, our personal management issues. And so she doubted she could do that. You know, then 2 blocks became 4 blocks, became 6 blocks, became, you know, a mile, 5K. And she completed a half marathon just recently at Walt Disney World. And I know Stacy well enough. I mean, she's like a sister to me. She never thought she was going to do that. So it kind of works in that same direction. It doesn't have to be, I'm going to be a marathon runner. Great. How are you going to do that? I don't know. Start off small. Just put it out there. Put your goal out there. And then figure it out, break it down piece by piece, how you can do that. So,
yep, exactly.
So let me ask you a question back to the book here. How long did it take you to write from the very first moment you decided to put pen to paper or you know, keyboard type into a Microsoft Word document to the very last moment where the book was out and it was published and it was on Amazon for sale? What was that process like? How long?
The actual writing process, I would say, was probably about 6 months, maybe 7 months.
Okay.
And then there was just that time of uncertainty for me after, you know, just basically thinking, okay, I'm moving into this publishing and, you know, we're going to be out by the summer. And so I started writing the book right around Labor Day of 2017. You know, kind of spent that first half of the year, you know, what I talked about before, kind of going bouncing around, then really focusing on it, laying it out, working on the idea. So from say roughly Labor Day weekend until I think about the end of February is the actual book writing process. And then, you know, went through the whole thing with the publisher. And like I said, I had that kind of where I froze for about 60 days and I was just uncertain about it. And that was just my own limiting belief about it. And so this last summer I said, okay, I'm going to self-publish and, you know, here are the steps. And I was asking questions and getting connected and, you know, like Jeff Barnes was gracious enough to introduce me to his editor and all of those things just started to happen. And so it took me about 5 months from there to get all of it self-published, you know, to get the editing done, to get the interior layout and the book design and all of those things that happen. So, you know, in an actual timeline, it was probably right around a year of time that it took, you know, to do that and self-publish. And a lot of it was just because of the uncertainty on my end. I just didn't really know. You know, it was great because I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't really know how to do it, but step by step, I learned. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I figured it out along the way. And again, I had, you know, people I could ask questions. So I think, you know, in reality, it was probably 16 months, but actual working on it was probably right around 12 months.
Yeah, I was putting the piece together, looking at the date that it was available on Amazon, looking at your starting point. So it's less than a year and a half, which is admirable considering you've never done this before. And people right. have had this idea for years and hardly even typed a word. So yep. What are your goals now that you are a published author? Like, what's the next step?
You know, first of all, I think, you know, for me, I just want to continue to hear more stories. Mm-hmm. That's become a passion for me is how did this all impact people? You know, for me, I don't have great visions of it being a New York Times bestseller. If all of those things happen, that's awesome. But just, you know, taking this book and connecting with people, you know, I really looked at it more of a, you know, like kind of a business card more than anything else. You know, instead of giving you my business card and creating a relationship with you, here's my book. Mm-hmm. And, you know, let's create our relationship that way. So that's, you know, that's really how I envision using it. You know, I'd love to be able to do some of the Disney events and interact and meet with people and, you know, again, hear their stories. So that's, you know, kind of the icing or the, you know, the cherry on the top for me. And just using it to build my business that I do now, you know, using it as, you know, a piece of, you know, credibility. I can say that I'm a published author and it adds to my coaching business.
Sure.
And I can now, you know, use that as another experience of my own and something that I've gone through and that I'm going through.
Great point.
To, you know, to use that in my coaching of, you know, not just entrepreneurs, but now, like you mentioned, mentorship, I can actually go through and be a mentor for somebody that wants to put that book together.
Yeah. What an awesome experience. So how do I do this, Terry? Well, let me tell you, these are the things that I found out. What experience did you have, Terry? Zero.
Right.
You know, I had zero. This is how it came to be. So, again, so it's called What the Magic Means. And, you know, boiling it down, and I'm going to probably say this inadequately, but boiling it down, it's really how Disney gave people hope and, like, courage and, like, purpose in their life and, like, how they made Disney the centerpiece of their life. But also, it allows you to explore how Disney could perhaps do the same for you, too, as well. Would that be accurate, Terry?
Yeah. You know, I'm just a big believer in if it affects you that much, then there are ways for you to incorporate it into your daily life, whether you live here or, you know, or not. There are ways for you to, you know, have some of that Disney magic in everything that you do.
Cool. Okay. So I'm going to circle back here, and I know you probably haven't thought about it, but I don't forget these things. Favorite villain, Terry? I'm still waiting on an answer. Favorite villain?
It's crazy. Like, the first thing that popped into my head, and I think the reason that I hesitated, because the first thing that popped into my head was, of all things, Ursula. And I really have no idea why Ursula would pop into my head like that. But I think it's just, like, I see her as just such a unique villain in all of this. You know, it's not the traditional.
She's so sassy. I love it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's again, it's completely different than what you would think as the typical villain, but for some reason, Ursula just jumped out to me.
You know what? That's cool. It's always the gut reaction. That's the most correct. Of course, when you're working out today or having breakfast, they'd be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I forgot. But
oh, I think of like 10 other people.
Ursula's awesome. No, she's a good one. All right. So Terry, if someone wanted to contact you, what's the best way people can get a hold of you?
You can find me on social media. If you search my name, you know, I'm all the platforms.
Instagram, I got you. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm typically most active on Facebook and probably most active on Instagram, actually. So if you search my name, Terry Wieland, on Instagram, otherwise, you know, you can go to my website, whatthemagicmeans.com. And, you know, you can see the information about the book. You can see the information about what I do, you know, in my coaching business and some of the groups that I do. A lot of mastermind groups where I bring, you know, people together for, you know, a 5-6 week period of time. And we just pull strategies typically out of a piece of content or a book or something like that. Actually, starting one next month in March with Jeff Barnes off of his book, The Wisdom of Walt. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we just do a lot of that kind of stuff where we just sort of, you know, put our heads together and talk about strategies and talk about how we can incorporate it into our lives. And you can find out all of that on my website.
Okay. And the best way to buy the book is through Amazon?
Yeah. You can either get it on Amazon, like you said, search, you know, What the Magic Means, or search my name. Or, you know, if somebody wants a signed copy directly from me, they can go to my website and go to whatthemagicmeans.com/book. And there's an opportunity to buy a signed copy there.
Outstanding. And I'll give a little plug here for the show. So if you haven't, if you're listening to the show and you haven't joined our private Facebook group, it's EDCOT, E-D-C-O-T, and that's the Experimental Dubs Community of Tomorrow. So if you haven't joined us, please do. We have a lot of great people, great content, not only Disney, but it's a supportive community. So no snark, a lot of fun. And if you haven't joined us, we certainly encourage that. So for my friend Terry and for myself, we'd like to thank you for listening and downloading, and we want to wish you a great day.
Thanks so much, Chris.